Today's theme, the future of humanities. And as a keynote speech, I'd like to talk about the society of cohabitation with robots, which I think has much to do with the future of humanities. Well, everybody knows that since ancient times, the question what are the humanities are has long been one of our eternal major problems. However, we must take notice that at present, in the 21st century, we are in a special situation. This is because the recent great development of computer technology, bioengineering, and robotics, and so on, have caused quite new problems, which are hard to be solved without interdisciplinary academic collaborations. We are going to live in a so-called man-machine world, okay? By interdisciplinary, I mean collaborations among philosophy, computer engineering, biology, medical science, but especially ethics. Without ethical considerations, our academic efforts will be in vain. So we are greatly in need of information ethics of the 21st century to solve these problems. As an example of these problems, let us take a short look at World Wide Web. These several years, World Wide Web has attracted much attention. I myself make use of Google search engine almost every day. But although World Wide Web with its search engine is a wonderful technological achievement, could we totally believe in that? Could we simply be assured of the progress in civilization? As you know well, there are many problems already indicated related to the web. For example, the spread of the demagogic and irresponsible discourses through the net, because as you know, anybody can write anything on the web, and anybody can read them. And besides, the easiness of copying and editing of the information on the web may bring about frequently copyright infringement and so on. And I would guess that these issues may be discussed in some detail in this conference too. But here, I'd like to draw your attention to another issue of World Wide Web, that is, mechanization of human thinking. First of all, notice that there are no logical consistencies among the enormous amount of knowledge propositions. Some 10 years ago, a molecular biologist used to say that there are about 100,000 genes in a human genome. But now, they say there are 20 or 30,000. And if we search, in a search list, most descriptions may appear, okay? So, we can find that the contradictory description on the net, okay? And the user will be at a loss. Likewise, we found the contradictory descriptions for any problems, any inquiries. The point is, searching consists of pure mechanical and automatic processes. For example, the listing priority with the parse frequency of references to the pages and so on. Okay. So the point is, It has nothing to do with the contents of the pages. In spite of that, some people insist that in time, artificial intelligence may not only assist but also replace the human thinking. It is well known that the founder or owner of the Google, the page and brain, are both enthusiasts of artificial intelligence, you know. And therefore, we must ask, what is the essential difference between humans and robots or computers? Because the thinking of a robot is based on some logical reasoning, or at least some computation. In a sense, the difference between the two, humans and computers, is clear. A human being is living by interacting with the environment, and therefore a human thinking process is based on physical activities, and human body is far from electrical equipment. Accordingly, if we violate imprudently the borderline between the humans and robots, we run the risk of dissolution of the concept of humankind itself. Could we find the standard answer to this problem? It is a very delicate and complicated problem, which is deeply related to the question, what the humanities are. And we must not forget that the concept of humanities is not the same between the East and the West. Therefore, there are no universal answers, okay? We must take notice of the differences in the Eastern and Western way of thinking of what humanities are, and especially we must take notice of people's attitude towards the robot. Let us focus on a more specific problem. Several weeks ago, I read an interesting book on the robot culture in Japan. The author is Frederick Kaplan, and the book's title is Les Machines Apprivoisées, Comprendre les Robots de Loisirs. In English, the Tamed Machines, Understanding the Entertainment Robots, and it was published in 2005. It has not yet translated into English, nor into Japanese, but I have a plan to publish the Japanese translation version with my colleague. The author Kaplan is a French researcher in the field of artificial intelligence and children's language acquisition. And he has been engaged in the development of entertainment robots in a Sony laboratory in Paris. That's why he knows well Japanese culture, not only traditional high culture like a tea ceremony or gardening, but also a modern subculture like animation, comics. And although there are many foreign scholars who are interested in Japanese culture, Kaplan, the author, is making comparative analysis based on his own experience of developing robots in Sony. This makes his book unique and interesting. This is Sony's iBook. It's a robot dog. And it caused quite a boom when it got started on sale in 1999. A lot of people in Japan were enthusiastic about iBo, saying, oh, how cute it is. I myself not so much impressed, but many people did. And Aibo was a forerunner of an entertainment robot. Soon it was followed by many humanoid robots, anthropomorphic robots. And several Japanese manufacturers like Honda, or NEC, NEC, or Hitachi and so on, created and commercial products, and one after another. The question is, why did they attract so many people in Japan? We must explore the question. According to Kaplan, there are three axes for robots. The first one is utility. It must be of some practical use. Let us imagine an industrial robot in an unmanned factory. Several months ago, I visited the big robot exposition in Tokyo, and I saw many robot demonstrations moving dynamically, and most of them were this kind of robot, industrial robot. And, well, they did not look like any animal at all. And so I wondered, what's the difference between these machines and these robots and the usual automatic machine? I don't know. But anyway, the industrial robots research is very popular in Japan. And the next one is, next axis is intelligence. A lot of computer scientists are eager to develop artificial intelligence robot to explore human mind. They want to inquire into issues such as whether or not a machine can chat with human being, or whether or not the machine can have emotion like human being, and so on. A very difficult problem. But anyway, this kind of robot is a research tool. And finally, the third axis is affection. There are entertainment robots to please human beings and stimulate their passions. A robot like Aibo has neither utility nor capability to promote scientific pursuit. But it is very important. If we think of the future society of cohabitation with robots. Let us notice our feeling towards humanoid robots. Kaplan emphasizes the fundamental differences between the East and the West. For Western people, the humanoid robot is fascinating but embarrassing weird monster suggesting Dr. Frankenstein and his horrible creation. And in general, the entertainment robot means the birth of something that belongs to an inadmissible category. And so Western people can hardly imagine to have an intimate emotional relation with such a creature. A real dog is much better than Aibo. On the other hand, a Japanese situation is quite different. For Japanese people, a humanoid robot is a pure scientific dream, a wonderful technological achievement recalling Astro Boy, who is a children's friend and humans alike. The Astro Boy, a robot animation character, has attained tremendous popularity in Japan. He was loved by everybody. And in fact, the hatred and uneasiness for robots can hardly be found in Japan. Japanese technological level of robot research is very, very high, and it is one of the most popular fields for the student majoring in engineering in the University of Tokyo. And therefore, the Kaplan insisted that entertainment robots would not have been born other than in Japan. However, we cannot say Japanese people's passion for robots is solely due to some animation character, like Astro Boy, because passion for a cute doll like Pinocchio can be seen almost over the world. And so we need deeper analysis. Kaplan traces back from the present to old days in Japanese history. And at the end of the 19th century, Japan was forced to accept Western civilization. The problem was how to cope with heterogeneous Western culture. And the attitude we took was don't merge, but tame it. No. That is, make good use of Western technology while keeping one's own spirit unchanged. Notice this attitude can be expressed by the words "wako ni yōsai" in Japanese. It's Japanese spirit and Western learning. The wa, Japanese, and kon, spirit, and yo, Western, and learning, sai. Okay. And the Japanese people do not like the so-called post-human society, where machine and human being melt into each other. So what is important for them is to preserve some distance, okay, preserve some distance from technology. And the point made by Kaplan is interesting because that he indicates that this distance makes it easier for Japanese to accept entertainment robots. Then we must ask, what is the essence of the Japanese spirit, which they strive so much to hold? Looking back at the old myths of Japan, we can find an animistic worldview, which is everything was born spontaneously and has its own spirit. In the West, on the other hand, there is a Judeo-Christian tradition where everything was created by God with clear intention and design. Certainly, in Japan, there is no feeling of blasphemous act against God related to robot creation. This sort of animism is considered to support the way of thinking which welcomes entertainment robots. The difference between design and ontogenesis leads to the difference in attitude towards nature. In Japan, the artifact is not opposed to nature. There is no sharp line between the two. And moreover, artifacts can be used to inquire into an even improved natural beauty. Okay. Kaplan illustrates as an example the episode of great master of tea ceremony of about 400 years ago, Senno Rikyu and Furuta Oribe. Rikyu is the founder of tea ceremony, and Oribe is his follower. The episode is like that. A tea ceremony, the roji, which is a small garden outside the tea ceremony house, must be kept clean. The problem is when to sweep up the roji. Usually, it is swept up immediately before the tea gathering. But Rikyu ordered that sweep it up at the previous night to achieve unintentional harmony through wind-blown foreign leaves. That is, he aimed at composite effect, the cleaning by hand, sweeping up, and the natural scattering of leaves. And that is a human act and natural effect come together. Okay. Oribe, Riki's follower, went further. His way was, after sweeping up the roji, lay deliberately some pine needles by hand to achieve perfect natural beauty. So he thought that perfect natural beauty could be attained through human acts. This is Zen no Rikyu, the greatest master of tea ceremony. He's considered to have embodied the Japanese aesthetic sentiment. But incidentally, he was forced to death by Harakiri Seppuku, by the Hideyoshi, the ruler who dominated at the time. This is Furuta Oribe, Riki's follower, and he was born and brought up as a feudal lord, and he did not distinguish himself as on the battlefield. Then he became a master of tea ceremony, and he succeeded to Riki's spiritual heritage. And this one, the right one, is Oribe ware. Take a look at this unique shape. It is not symmetric, it's asymmetric and distorted, okay? And Oribe intentionally distorted it. So every piece of Oribe ware has its own personality. In short, according to Kaplan, the difference in attitude towards nature between Japan and the West can be summarized as relation versus order. In Japan, we find the desire for relation. A human being is an element of the fabric of nature, like a bird or stone. And artifacts are also integrated in the fabric on an equal footing, in principle. That is, every object is related and integrated in the fabric without being distinguished. Therefore, it is very difficult to draw a sharp line between living and non-living things. In the West, on the other hand, we find the desire for hierarchical order. The order itself changes depending on the age. In the old age, it was a divine order, but now it's a scientific order. But the desire for order itself persists throughout the years. Okay. In this cultural tradition, a human being holds a special position in the hierarchical order of existence. And in its artifacts are positioned below animals. And so the strong reaction to entertainment robot in Western countries has been caused by this cultural background. In this way, the Kaplan tries to answer the question, why only in Japan was an entertainment robot born? Namely, it is because Japanese people think more of relating things than of ordering them. And the Japanese spirit is never threatened by robots as far as the spirit successfully adapts itself to technology. The production of the robot has a special role in Japanese society. Especially, you must notice that the production of a robot is included in the aesthetic pursuit of beauty that is peculiar to Japanese spirit. Thus, concludes Kaplan, the Japanese people can peacefully coexist with entertainment robots. Well, gentlemen, ladies, what do you think of the Kaplan's analysis? Is it too simple? Now, let us give some comments on it. First, his argument is not very original. Kaplan owes most of his argument to that of Augustin Belk, the very well-known researcher of Japanese culture. Belk wrote a very famous book, whose title is Le Sauvage et l'Artifice, Le Japonais devant la Nature, The Wildness and Artificiality, the Japanese before Nature. And the episode I just mentioned, the Rikyu and Oribe, is written in that book. The second, we cannot take Japanese culture as a typical one in Asia. There are so many different cultures in Asia, and the East is not uniform. A humanoid robot is expected to accept it in China and Korea, but not in nations with Islamic tradition like Indonesia or in West Asia. Because as you know, the Islamism prohibits idol. In spite of that, I think Kaplan's argument is very suggestive, especially it gives us some useful insights when we try to consider what human beings, particularly Japanese people, should do in the 21st century. What I'm going to say from now on is mostly about Japanese information society, but I would guess that many societies in the East have more or less similar characteristics. First of all, Japanese engineers are interested more in detailed technical improvements and refinements than in the philosophical meaning of their product in society. And that they are unfamiliar with the world order, that hierarchical of existence. But I don't think they are to blame for that, because they can get rid of anthropocentrism for this ignorance. Nevertheless, I'd like to indicate that their problem is a vagueness of boundary. We can find vague borderlines between objects in general, between the living things and non-living things, and between human beings and other living things, or even between, I dare say, individuals. The important point is that the traditional indifference to the world order does not necessarily offer a safeguard against a cyborg or mechanization of human thinking. Japanese people may surely have a sort of disgusting feeling about cyborg or mechanization of human thinking. But if everything has its own spirit and the same value, why are we not allowed to reconstruct our bodies and thoughts as freely as we like by using information technology? Accordingly, for the problem of roboting or so a cyborg, the concept of the Japanese spirit and Western learning is no longer sufficient, no longer enough. Well, in my opinion, Japanese people should pay more attention to the philosophical concept of autonomy. Well, incidentally, the autonomous robot AIBO does not sell well right now. And it seems attractive at the beginning, but soon it becomes boring. And in fact, it is not on sale anymore in Japan. Why did that happen? First first of all, we must ask, is Aibo autonomous in true sense? Many engineers like to use the word autonomous robot, but I think a usual autonomous robot is simply a learning machine which changes its action in response to outer stimuli in such a way to increase some calculated value in a preset evaluation domain. So I think today's autonomous entertainment robot is a fake machine. It's my opinion. So without deep inquiry into biological autonomy, a care robot could never be appreciated by general people, and especially old people. The most important point of this issue is the concept of autonomy. The concept of the autonomy must be investigated in more detail to avoid machine reductionism. My personal impression is that the Japanese concept of an autonomous subject differs greatly from that in Western countries. The key word is free will. If everything is controlled by physical causality, any action driven by human free will would be impossible. This makes the concept of autonomy ambiguous. It was Kant who discussed the problem in detail, as you know, and he wrote a famous book that is Critique der praktischen Vernunft. I would guess his argument is often referred to in Western countries when talking about the autonomy of a robot. However, in Japan, the discussions on human free will and autonomy tend to be neglected. Generally speaking, in the Japanese community, harmonious cooperation with others is respected, and autonomy is easy to be ignored. In short, people must behave just like others. An ordinary life of an average Japanese is mostly carried out with clock-like mechanical rhythm. A good example is the outstanding accuracy of time schedule in Japanese bullet train Shinkansen. Seen from Western viewpoint, a Japanese may look like a mechanical person. And I think this attitude can be dangerous in a highly developed information society dependent on World Wide Web. Notice that academic efforts have been made on this issue. For example, a radical inquiry into biological autonomy is being made by Utopoiesis theory of Matrana and Valera, which insists that autonomy is the essence of living things. Personally, I believe that a sharp line between living and non-living things can be found. The robots are not autonomous in the true sense. This is a very controversial topic, and some of you may have an opposite opinion, but I think so. And anyway, a new approach to the human free will, human freedom, is necessary in the field of information ethics. And I hope my research, the term fundamental informatics, could contribute even a little to this problem. As a conclusion, let me indicate the crucial point of this problem. First, robot can never have true human mind. At least it's very, very difficult. But instead, the human being can gradually lose their free will and make themselves closer to robots. And second, therefore, consideration of robot is expected to bring about fruitful discussions on the future of humanities. And of course, I hope many other related issues, as well as this one, will openly be discussed in this valuable conference. Thank you very much.
We have plenty of time for questions. Tony? Ludo, the process.